And now, coming to you nearly live from deep within an abandoned mineshaft underneath Virginia City, it's the Storyteller Podcast. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I'm CM Toll, editor of the Storyteller Online. Welcome to our inaugural episode of the Storyteller Online Podcast. Eventually, I'll come up with a catchy title for the podcast, but for now, that's what it is. In addition to my coverage of Story County through our online news stream, I look forward to bringing you interviews, commentary, and opinion from interesting people in Story County. This podcast is being recorded and posted on Saturday, March 18th, and unless you've been living in a neighboring mineshaft for the last couple of months, there is an effort underway to unseat Sheriff Gerald Antonoro and recall him from office. On April 11th, the good people of Story County will decide if the sheriff they elected in 2014 will finish his term or will be replaced. Unless a qualified candidate delivers 477 signatures to County Clerk Vanessa Stevens by March 22nd and throws their name into the ring, Nevada's revised statute requires that our county commissioners select an interim sheriff. The allegations leveled against Sheriff Antonoro are serious. Sexual harassment, wrongful terminations resulting in costly settlements, and mismanagement of public funds through his budget. Today we sat down with the sheriff and discussed these matters to hear his side of the story. I'm here today with Story County Sheriff Gerald Antonoro, and here today at his house, he was nice enough to invite me in to talk about some of the issues that have come up during the recall effort. Jerry, thank you very much for inviting me into your house and taking the time to talk. You've been in law enforcement your entire career, is that right?
Yeah, 34 years.
And you've been here in Story County how long?
A little over 10 years, almost 11 years now.
And you've been sheriff since 2010, elected, but I think you got the job just a little bit earlier than that, is that right?
Well, elected 2010, took office January of 2011.
The community has really been kind of polarized by this issue, and there's a core group of folks who are taking umbrage with the way that you conduct your office. They've, you know, gone around town. They've collected signatures for a recall petition. They've had those signatures confirmed by the county clerk here in Story County, and they've been approved by the Secretary of State. And there is a recall election that's going to happen on April 11th. Some of the issues that have been raised in the petition that circulated and throughout the blogosphere have been pretty serious, and so I'd like to talk about those point by point and get your feedback on them. Let's start with the ethics complaints. Can you speak to those?
Well, this is one of those things, like all of their allegations, is that they make a lot of smoke and noise over it, but there's really nothing there. The one ethics situation that has been finalized, they point to that as a violation. There was no violation. Anybody can read that ethics complaint. You know, they can see what the ruling was. Basically, in essence, the agreement says we agreed that you could make the argument either way, but that if there was a violation, there was no intent to it. But that's all we agreed to, is that you could argue it either way. They asked me to clarify my policies, and I did. My position is that there was no ethics violation, and there's no ruling saying that there was.
We'll include a copy of the complaint findings in the show notes, which can be found at storyteller.online. There's other complaints that have been raised by the recall folks. Can you speak to those? Those, I assume, are still working their way through the process.
Yeah, there's been multiple complaints made, and it's all by the same people who are behind the recall election. The one complaint involves an endorsement with a politician in another part of the state, and they point to a stipulated agreement that I had with the Ethics Commission saying, well, see, he said that he did it. No, I said that I did the endorsement. I'm not denying that. I've never denied that. But what I am fighting is that there's any violation there. They like to say that I'm violating all these laws, and they like to make all these allegations against me without any kind of proof, and claim that that's their First Amendment rights. Well, guess what? I have First Amendment rights too, and I have the ability to make statements of support for other politicians in other places. That does not make it a crime. My attorney feels that we have a good case, and we're proceeding with it. You know, that's the whole purpose for having hearings and attorneys and everything else. Where there's issues with the law, you argue them out and you come to clarity that helps everybody in the future. They claim that it's a violation because the sheriff's office logo is on there. Well, you know, the Ethics Commission said, well, you could have done the exact same thing without putting that logo on there, and it would have been perfectly fine. So is a digital image that was created as when I became the sheriff, is that a violation? Didn't cost the county anything, didn't cost any time, didn't cost any paper, didn't cost any anything, and it doesn't give the perception that it is a governmental function. The endorsement clearly states I endorsed the individual. So, you know, it's one of those things when the law was written, it didn't cover things like digital images. So there's allowances in the law that allow elected officials to do certain things. That's one that really was not covered by the law the way it was written. So it's a point to argue, and our position is that there is no violation there.
As a layman and as a guy who's not, you know, literate in the law or the, you know, what constitutes a violation or not, I mean, I saw you and two or three of your colleagues from Washoe County and Carson City County on television endorsing or campaigning against the background check question that was on the 2016 ballot. So I was a little confused as to why endorsing a candidate on letterhead would be any different than wearing your uniform with the Story County badge and patch clearly identified as also being something that would be completely legitimate. So I'm guessing that they're not filing an ethics violation on your appearance in those ads.
Well, not as of yet. They may after this recording, but no, and that's the position is, you know, that's what I say. The law allows elected officials to do certain things, and no different than what you claim, you know, with being in uniform and everything, is the use of this digital image. And that's what it all centers around is, can I use a digital image that's representative of my position as the sheriff?
Let's move on past the ethics complaints to the sexual harassment charges that have been bandied about. I read a document on a website that contained not only this document but other confidential county documents, and it was a portion, about 8 pages, of a report that was filed apparently by an investigator. I requested copies of this report in its entirety to authenticate what I was reading from the county, specifically Pat Whitten, the county manager, and he told me that because those were confidential documents, he was unable to release them to me. So no one is really able to verify whether or not these documents are legit, but obviously, you know, the situation between you and a former deputy exists. Can you share a little bit about your experience with that and your position on this issue of sexual harassment?
Well, it is interesting that you can't get a copy of the report, since the recall people were able to get stuff that they put out there on the web. So that should tell you something right there. But as far as the complaint itself goes, I mean, it's nonsense. You know, I had a conversation with an employee whom had professed to be a personal friend, said, hey, you're a friend, you're a confidant, we're not co-workers or just boss and employee. We're friends. We can talk about things. We then engaged in a conversation about issues in my personal life. You know, I have said repeatedly, hey, if I misunderstood the nature of our friendship, you know, or if I went overboard in sharing in my personal life, you know, my bad. I apologize if that caused her any kind of concern, consternation, or issues in her life. But the fact of the matter is, I thought I was talking to a friend about personal issues and things that she had asked me about. So, you know, I don't know what else there is to say. The law says that to be a violation, it has to be severe or persistent. Well, it definitely wasn't persistent because it happened one time in the course of 10 years. Severe, I guess that dependent on the holder, you know, whoever is hearing. But the fact of the matter is I was talking to a friend. No different than if you and I went to coffee and started talking about whatever it is we wanted to talk about.
So yeah, there is a suggestion that in the complaints, or at least in what's being put out there by the folks who want to recall you, that this is an ongoing, persistent, consistent process where you know, not just in this case, but overall in the way that you manage your personnel, are heavy-handed, and that you are, you know, consistently overbearing and handle your personnel that with an iron fist. This was an isolated incident, and it didn't happen previous to that. It didn't happen after that, and you've publicly apologized. So, is there any more to this than what you've said, or it sounds pretty straightforward.
And that's all there is to it. There's been other employees who have left. They claim sexual harassment or some other type of harassment after they've been terminated for whatever reason. We're dealing with one issue right now where a female employee was terminated. That's one of her allegations is sexual harassment. Claims that's why she was terminated, when in fact she left four high security doors open in the jail. But that's the nature of all of this stuff with employee complaints. When somebody's not doing their job and they're facing problems, or once they have been terminated or whatever, then they make allegations. Well, this group that's behind the recall, they take all of this stuff, they present it as if it's fact, when 99.9% of this stuff has been thrown out. The one issue that has happened with my former deputy, my former chief deputy, that we've already addressed, and like I said, it was a one-time conversation that we had, and there's been things over the years that we've shared back and forth with each other. So when she asks me about issues in my personal life, and I'm confiding in her issues in my personal life, why would I think that was a violation? Like I said, if it caused her concern, if it caused her angst, if it caused her anxiety, my bad, I apologize. I misrepresented or misunderstood what I believe to be our friendship.
And have you apologized to her directly?
I have not even spoken to her. She's never said a word to me about it. Matter of fact, I was out of town when she made the complaint, and came back to town and had no idea what was going on. I'm trying to track down ideas. The county, for a number of months, wouldn't even tell me, other than she had been reassigned.
Interesting. Let's segue into the wrongful termination allegations. There's been a lot of hay made about your actions in personnel decisions costing the county $144,000. Those decisions were based upon your interaction with your employees and then the county's reaction to these terminations and the efforts that the terminated employees went through to plead their case or to take issue of their termination. I've written emails to the county manager, to the DA, to the HR personnel, and to the county commissioners to verify statements that you made in an interview to me with me that was printed in the Comstock Chronicle earlier. I think it was November, October of 2016, and similar conflicting statements that Chris Thompson, who is leading up the recall effort, has made that are in complete direct conflict with each other, for clarification, because it's your position, and as it turns out on the record, in county commissioner meetings, it is the county's position that these terminations were done by the book and that they, as a group, decided to pay the folks rather than fight. What's your comment on that?
Well, you're absolutely right, Sam, that, the county manager has said in open meetings that, you know, these things were done by the book. When an employee is terminated, it's not just me waking up in the morning and saying, yeah, I think I'm going to go fire somebody today. You know, there's policy violations, there's issues in play that are discussed with the county manager, who is the risk manager for the county. They're discussed with human resources, they're discussed with legal counsel, and everybody is in agreement and signs off on the termination before the termination happens. The flip side of that is when they decide they're going to settle a case, I couldn't tell you who's involved in that because they don't consult me. But I do know that all of those people previously named were in agreeance and concurrence that the termination was proper.
So, and to kind of confirm that from a layman's perspective, is it not true that if someone is in fact terminated without cause, or it's been determined that there was an unjust firing, that they get their job back, or at least they get the opportunity to take it back? Is that a true statement?
Well, true. In most instances, yes, if you're wrongfully terminated, you have the ability to reclaim your position. And, you know, just logically speaking, you know, if you're terminated and you agree to a settlement, you know, you're looking at giving up a career for $45,000, in at least in the one instance. Is that $45,000 really worth your career? But in that particular case, that was actually a deputy who lost their driver's license for their conduct. So how am I supposed to keep somebody like that? You know, it's one of those things. Is none of this stuff that is being propagated by the recall effort is factual. And when you give it critical thought, it just doesn't bear out.
And my investigation has really fleshed that out. I'll be including the open meeting, a reference to that open meeting, and the statements made by both Mr. Witten and Mr. Osborne regarding the county's position on that in our show notes. I'd like to talk a little bit now about something, and it's interesting. I was talking about this very thing to a fellow in Virginia City yesterday about the Black investigation. It was a big item of contention in the 2014 re-election. You won and retained your office, and it has to do with the Black investigation, your handling of the investigation, and there's the perception in the community that basically that you bungled it, that you didn't have the experience required for a case like that, and that your conduct both at the investigation and after the investigation and follow-up efforts really allowed a woman to be murdered and to have her husband, the guilty man, walk the streets freely until the district attorney did her job and stepped in. What's your comment on that?
Well, again, utter hogwash. You know, one is, if you want references, I can give you the names of several people sitting in prison right now because of murder cases that I've been involved with and investigated in the past. You know, the people who started this had political motivations to begin with, and none of them ever stepped foot on a scene. You know, they talk about how, you know, it looked like a slaughterhouse in there. Well, they wouldn't know what it looked like because they never stepped foot on the scene. Fact of the matter is that, you know, whoever is the person of interest in a case has due process rights. Something else that Team Recall seems to forget is, you know, that people do have rights. I can't just go and arrest somebody because they happen to be in the vicinity. That's the old days kind of doing things, not the way that things are done now. We actually have to have a little thing called evidence. And the guy who leads up the recall, having been a former attorney, I would think he would know that, and how the legal system works. You know, but as far as bungling it, there was nothing bungled. They get locked up because I offered an initial press release that said that it appeared to be an accidental death. But what they miss is that the caveat on there that says, but we continue to investigate, which we have. We've continued to investigate all along. Everything that's come up, we've looked into. Everything that has been thrown our way, we've ran it to ground to see if there's anything. You know, I don't know where they get this bungling. That's how things are done. You investigate until such time as the district attorney decides there's evidence to prove a crime had been committed, and that there's sufficient evidence to show who it was committed at. That's the way that the system works. You know, I don't hear anybody raising a big stink over a neighboring jurisdiction who just recently arrested a fellow after initially saying that was an accidental death, and that involved a gunshot. They just, you know, a year later, they arrest somebody. I've also heard it said that, well, nobody falls down a flight of stairs and dies. You should have known right up front that was not an accident. Well, okay. Again, another neighboring agency, they just recently reported on a death of a young male individual who fell down a flight of stairs and died, and they weren't charging anybody in that. So is anybody going to go and raise red flags over that and ask, you know, who's bungling those cases? I mean, these allegations are being leveled by people who, one, they don't understand how investigations work. They obviously don't understand how the law works. You know, whether I believed that it was a murder or not, when I stood there on that scene, until and unless I have evidence to show a crime and who committed it, I can't arrest. That's the way that it works. You know, this isn't the Wild Wild West or even the way it was a few years ago where, you know, you see somebody walking down the street, they look like they're a bandit, so you throw them in jail.
The Founding Fathers did have processes like this where, in mind where, you know what, you're not guilty until proven innocent. It's the other way around. The fact that it has been an object of division within the community, it is really representative of the things that people will look at and what they'll sort of grab onto to try and discredit your tenure in office. I've had the opportunity to go back and look through a number of incidents that have happened in the past, and it's really interesting to see the troops lining up and kind of circling the wagons against you. And from my perception as a, you know, as a layman, as just an average guy on the street, it seems to me that the brand of community-based policing that you seem to subscribe to is something that really we could use a lot more of across the country. If you look at the Black Lives Matter, if you look at what happened in Dallas, Texas a couple months ago, if you look at the division in our country, I think that we could use a little bit more of the brand of policing that you employ. Let's move on to the last thing I'd like to talk about, and that is the allegation that you're irresponsible steward of the taxpayers' money. I'm doing an exhaustive analysis of your department and the fire department just to compare the two public safety budgets and see where the numbers lie. I'm going to provide that report when it's done in the show notes as well, but talk a little bit about the balance of the safety of the community, the safety of your officers, and the amount of money that you're given to do that, and what your perspective is on the claims that you're an irresponsible steward of taxpayer money.
Well, I would say my initial response to that would be, just look at my budgets. And if you look at the budget since I have taken office, you know, we have been running things very tightly. If you look at the budgets as the total amount allocated, the total amount expended, and then the correlating percentage, you know, and you'll see that we're dialing it in very tight. If you look overall, there's not been a substantial amount of growth in my budget. The Team Recall likes to say, well, I demanded $1 million. Well, yeah, when they come to me and they say, what would be your ideal budget? And so I present my ideal budget, and yes, it's going to cost $1 million more, not unjustified. But, you know, that's not making a demand or being unreasonable. That's the process. I submit what I want, and then we hash out what we need and what we can afford, and then we do what we can with what's allocated to us. But fact of the matter is right now, this year, my budget is the highest it's ever been. From the time I took office until today, my budget has fluctuated $500,000, $500,000 from highest budget to lowest budget, and it's not a steady upward climb, even though that's not uncommon with government. Things don't get cheaper as we go along for the most part. But, you know, it's been up, it's been down, it's been up, it's been down. A lot of economic factors drive that. But highest to lowest, $500,000 spread, you know, and right now being the highest that it's ever been, it's still $1 million lower than my predecessor's was at the height of the recession, right after we laid off people. The budget in 2009 was $4.5 million. Mine's $3.5 million right now. You know, as long as we have unions that are driving wages, collective bargaining and stuff like that, you know, the wages are 80-85% of the budget. You look at the actual operating costs of the sheriff's office, and that's not changed a whole bunch. You know, with that $1 million less budget, we're doing more now than we ever did before. And just to circle back on what you said about community-based policing, That's absolutely a necessity. You know, we have to have rapport with the citizens of the community. We have to work with citizens of the community. But I've even been bashed over that because I worked with the wrong people, or you know, I accepted assistance from the wrong person. You know, they had too long of hair, or they had, you know, funny looking patches on their clothes or something. You know, it's silly, the criticisms that are being thrown at me, and totally, you know, one-sided, totally to try and, just like you said, discredit my office, discredit me and what I have done. We're far from blowing up the budget. My newest budget that I just submitted for next year, if it's approved, it's going to have a couple $1,000s or a couple $100,000 increase. It'll go up to about 3.7, 3.8 million if it's approved as it stands. But you know what? We need vehicles. Deputies can't do their job if they don't have vehicles in a rural area. You know, it's kind of hard to respond on foot to the Highlands. And right now we've got vehicles that are falling apart. You know, a lot of times I still have a single deputy out on either half of the county with the geographic divide that we have. You know, the deputy in Virginia City is really of little use to the deputy who's working on the north end of the county. You know, we're at the mercy, basically, of our neighboring agencies, and if there's a need for assistance, you know, it's up to whether they have somebody available to respond to a help. Otherwise, my people are out there on their own, and that's still the case a lot of times. When I ask for more bodies, it's for that purpose. It's so we can better serve the people, and I try to balance what I need with what is reasonable to expect payment for. I'm not asking for you know, drones. I'm not asking for machine guns. I'm not asking for, you know, MRAPs or other military items. You know, I want to be able to provide basic service to the people of the county without having to have them wait. You know, the increased volume in the industrial center, you know, that's utilizing more and more resources because of the traffic volumes down there and the corresponding crashes that happen with that. You know, so if I have two people on the north end of the county, I can keep somebody in the residential area and somebody in the industrial area at the same time. And then if something happens, they're only a few miles apart. Same thing on the south end of the county. If I've got a deputy in Virginia City, if I have two people on, I can have one out in the Highlands and one in Virginia City at the same time, or I can have one in the Highlands and one in Mark Twain. Still, if something happens, they're only a few miles apart. They can pretty well help each other out. That's the budget I asked for. But again, we're talking about the reality of what is, not what we would like to have. The reality of what is more often than not, I have a single deputy on either side of the county. I'm driving vehicles that, you know, we try to keep bandaged together, and my budget is still $1 million lower than it was at the height of the recession.
You know, and I think that is really a point that is missed in the community. Every single budget that I've looked at has had a nice increase in spending year on over year on over year. And you're suggesting that even with 6,000-8,000 employees of companies that operate TRI complex with the folks in the Highlands, with, you know, being out there in the backwoods, you know, separated from each other, having your deputies pretty much be the Lone Ranger, so to speak, on their shift, is really sort of a testament and completely opposite of what we're led to believe is your approach to spending our dollars. And I think that it's important for people, you know, and I hope that folks who hear this talk about it with their friends and share it with folks in the community before the April 11th election, so that they can hear from the sheriff's own words what it is that is real. And in fact, you know, again, I will be posting these budgets so that folks can see from the county's documents what is real and what is fabrication.
Well, and that's something that's important to reiterate, Sam, is that you know, this is not about blowing up my budget. This is about a matter of truth versus fiction. A lot of the things that I am saying, the documentation is there for it. It's easily and readily available to every citizen of the county. You know, and you were absolutely right. There's increases and there's more things that have been done here and there across the board. The county's overall budget has gone up tremendously over the last several years. Just in a recent county commission meeting, the comptroller was giving a report on the last audited budget. And he made the comment during the meeting that public safety had increased $1.7 million during the budget year. Well, I got to scratching my head and looking at the numbers, and I don't know where that's going, because that particular year that he was talking about, there was only a $21,000 difference in my budget from the previous year. So that 1.7, somebody wants to look at where the budget's blowing up, they need to do some more looking, because it's not my budget that's blowing up. And I'm not begrudging any of the county offices or county departments their money, you know, that we've all got our jobs to do. But to sit there and tell me how I'm squandering all this money and wasteful with the budget is just completely ludicrous. And anybody who wants to take even a casual glance will see my budget's not blowing up by any means. I try to balance the resources that are entrusted to me with the needs of my deputies and the needs of the citizens. I've got to keep the citizenry safe, I've got to keep my deputies safe, and I have to have the ability to respond when we're needed. Because yes, we are out there, unlike all the rest of the county offices and departments, we are there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We're not taking breaks, we're not sitting there, you know, waiting for the next call to come in. We don't have 8 to 5 hours. We are a 24-hour operation. And we are always available.
And I think it's important to note that when you have to do your job, it's not a matter of dealing with a person who's upset because their water bill is too high. You're dealing with actual bad guys, the people who are interested in putting, you know, your deputies, your employees, and the citizens of Story County in danger with violence. And I'm very proud of the jobs that your deputies do under your leadership, what you've been able to, the level of peace that you've been able to keep in the community. I think that Story County and the voters in Story County will recognize that. And I think that now that they've had a chance to hear it, hear your voice tell it, I think that, you know, we should be able to clean up some of the misconceptions that may be raised by things that folks hear. We're pushing at the half hour mark here, so I'd like to wrap it up. Jerry, in closing, what's your message to the community? Is there anything you'd like to add to what we've talked about in closing?
You know, just the message that I've been sending, and I'd just like to reiterate it. We've got a lot of great people in Story County. I have faith in them that they will see this nonsense for what it is. I invite anybody to contact me anytime there's any questions. I freely give out my cell phone number. My home phone number is listed in a phone book. Anybody can stop by the office, regardless of what my personal take is on any of this. I've never shut out any of the county residents. I'm always available 24 hours a day, even to the detriment of my own personal life and my own personal relationships and everything. I'm more than happy to talk with people of the county anytime. And, you know, like I said, I have great faith that the people will see this for what it is. And I ask them all to get out and vote on the 11th. Don't let your voice get silenced.
Thank you, Jerry. And speaking of your personal relationships, congratulations on your upcoming wedding. And I wish you the best of luck on the 11th and throughout the rest of your life. Good luck, sir.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you for making it this far. If you have something you'd like to say to the community, please do so by chiming in the comment section below. In the meantime, think about what the sheriff has said. Pick up the phone and give him a call if you have any questions or if you think that he's full of horse feathers. Consider the choice that lays ahead of you. Make up your mind and cast your vote. Thank you for listening to the premier podcast of The Storyteller Online, and we'll see you next time. This has been a production of Battleborn Digital Media Services, and is freely reproducible and distributable under the Creative Commons copyright version 4.0.